Okay, good evening. Firstly, Chodesh Tov, it's Shenichnas Adar Abim Simcha. The word Adar is always closely related to the word Nisan, which seems to be related to the word Pesach. Sorry about that.
You go to
ShopRite, you know exactly that. They're already onto Shavuos as far as ShopRite is concerned.
You've got a room full of women, you do
realize. I do indeed, that I was taking my life in my hands. Just one thought about, we say, Mishnechnas Av Marbim B'Simcha. Marbim means to increase, right? And it says, Mishnechnas Av, when the month of Av begins, Mema'atim, you go down. But it never says to be without, right? A Jew should always be B'Simcha. It's always one of those things that, you know, that the world is an amazing world, and God is an amazing God, and, okay, a lot of questions, a lot of difficulty, a lot of challenges, but never be without simcha. I think I heard this obviously from some Hasidic gentleman once upon a time. But you know what? It's a philosophy of life. You can cope with a lot of things with that kind of positive attitude. And I never forgot it, and I think it's just worth sharing with you. This evening we're going to talk about something which is really disturbing in the world that we live in. And that is about secrecy, keeping things, as they say, under your hat, or words to that effect. I just read today, yet again, this guy, there is the guy from, is it WikiLeaks or Wiki something, Assange, I don't know if he's British, I don't know what he is. He's in an embassy somewhere in Sweden, is that right? Is that the story? And he can't get out of there because he'll be arrested because he's blown the lid on so many secrets from different agencies around the world. It's a scary world that we are living in where nothing seems to be a secret anymore. Nothing seems to be a confidence, right? We're living in a world which, I'm just listening to a book at the moment which is set about 20 years ahead, and the drones are following you around. This is the most scary scene one can ever imagine, that Big Brother has finally come about, right? The famous George Orwell idea. And you can't get away from the drone which is above you, somewhere in the sky, which is not only following you and listening to you, but you know, taking pictures and whatever. There is this sense of, as technology becomes more and more sophisticated, it could very well be that, you know, that the idea of a confidence may become more and more difficult to achieve. I don't know what to say. It's, as I said over here, the age of information. This I wrote a long time ago. This is dated, this paper. Because I think I did it about, must have been at least 10, maybe even 15 years ago. If I didn't put a date on it. Oh, 5758, 20 years ago. Wow. And since then, things have moved on. But even then, when I first put this together, I've given this lecture maybe two or three times since then. You know, there's a lot of information which is available. So we know that. But there's also the sense that there is now, we're living in a world of show and tell. Right, that someone who thought that something was completely confidential, it turns out it wasn't. Okay, all right, we're talking about sort of people in the public eye, and sometimes, you know, we feel that that's the price you pay for being in the public eye, right, that people, good evening, you know, you can't keep anything secret these days, but nevertheless, you know, it's a very, it's a shameful world where this type of thing becomes acceptable. And I'm horrified in the way that, you know, we just brush it off. We don't seem to sort of find it objectionable, this kind of constant revelation that we have. You know, something that was a confidence, something was private, all of a sudden becomes the most public thing you could ever imagine. I remember back in the 60s, the scandal in England about the Minister of War, John Profumo. I don't know if you know this story. And what happened was that his luck, he was a bit of a lowlife. And he had a girlfriend who happened to be also a girlfriend to the Russian, one of the Russian attachés in London. So the danger was, or the doubt was, that he was in fact sharing secrets with her, which she was then passing on to her Russian friend. And also the Russian friend, secrets from him was being passed on to Mr. Profumo. But the problem was that in the situation of Cold War in 1963, I think it was, this was not the way to go about things. And it was really serious. It became a public scandal. The government fell in England. The Conservative government, Macmillan's government, actually fell over this whole thing. Labour came in, and, you know, again, and then there was a tremendous uproar that this was, you know, something which was a revelation of secrets, etc., and it created a tremendous kerfuffle. Today, I'm not sure, even if it would have reached the back page, you know, of whichever newspaper it is, whether we would have been remotely impressed by what was going on. I'm really not sure. It's disturbing. And that's on the macro level. And I want to talk more about what I'm calling the micro level, because these are dilemmas which I think many of us, either professionally, rabbinically, right, you know, can face on a day-to-day basis. I've given here a couple of dilemmas for doctors and lawyers. Okay, they're both sworn to secrecy. They both have this idea of confidentiality. When someone shares a certain piece of information with you as a doctor or as a lawyer, this is the confidential, the client privilege relationship, right? And then, of course, the question is, once you know this, what do you do with this information if it becomes relevant to reveal it in a circumstance? It could be. The circumstance which I think the one that I personally found the most difficult as a rabbi to deal with was the phone call where somebody says, I like the expression in Yiddish, they read a shidduch, right? There's a shidduch going on, and rabbi, what do you know about the family? Oi. And this is a phone call which I used to dread, because whatever you say, it's like you say in English, the devil in deep blue sea, whatever you say is going to be wrong. Or it's going to be interpreted or maybe misinterpreted. It's the most difficult thing to give any sort of opinion on, and particularly if there's something which may not necessarily be make or break, but you know that once upon a time maybe the father sat in jail 30 years ago because he did a fraud, but you know he's been a good boy ever since. Who knows? You know, certain things which are just not known to community, which the rabbi kind of finds out about or is made known to him. And these are very, very difficult situations. Do you reveal the problem or not? And of course, for a doctor, and particularly in the frum community, it can be very, very difficult as well, when obviously there are circumstances in shidduchim where, you know, people are asking very serious medical questions. With the Ashkenazi traditions, unfortunately, of genetic diseases, which we know that, it just is something that is there. Very often it can be very challenging, and that's why something like Dor Yesharim, if you know what that is, there is an organization which does genetic testing before couples get married, and it's all done in a very secret, sort of, you know, private basis, as far as I understand. It wasn't around when we got married, so it's just one of those things that just didn't happen in those days. I don't think there was Dor Yesharim in those days. And something like that. The discovery of an embezzlement. You're the accountant in the firm. And all of a sudden you discover, oi, that, you know, there's been money been sifted away or some sort of scheme that's been going on. I mean, Mr. Madoff's accountant, I mean, he must have had a heart attack when he realized what was going on. And all this sort of thing. How much do you then reveal? Do you go to the government? Do you not go to the government? The whole question of what is called a moiser. A moiser is this expression which is used in the frum community that religious Jews don't go to the government. And we're living in the 21st century when, unfortunately, the 19th century attitude which that sort of presents is today sometimes used as an excuse to cover over who knows what abuses and what frauds and who knows what else that's going on. Don't go to the government, don't tell the police, don't tell anybody, because it's called moise. And that is really not the definition, certainly not today. But it's used, the community, the very religious community, particularly Hasidic community, which comes from a tradition of anti-Semitism in Poland and Russia, they live with that kind of mentality to this very day. And all of this is all part of the discussion about keeping a confidence, when to keep it to yourself, when to reveal it, should you reveal it, should you not reveal it, what are the parameters? That's really what I want to deal with. I can't deal with every specific case very often. This is a sort of a situation where you have to ask a shayla, all right? Normally we know we ask a shayla if I mix my milk and meat, right? That's my shayla to the rabbi. Or when do I light my, you know, yahrzeit light or whatever shayla you may have. But sometimes you have to ask the rabbi a question like this because it is a rabbinic question. Do I reveal this information or do I not? Do I give the information to the government if I know about it, or should I sit on it? You know, you can add, this is a valid halakhic question. There's a wonderful thing, maybe we'll get to the end, about a teacher. Can a teacher punish a class in order to find out the information from the class of who broke the window? All right, can you give collective punishments or not? You think to yourself, that's in pedagogy, it's not necessarily a question in halacha, but Rav Moshe Feinstein writes about it. Very interesting what he says about it. Maybe we'll come to that sort of towards the end. I want to deal with this maybe in two stages. We're going to deal with initially with what I'm calling the more philosophical approach, the sort of more ethical approach. Let's go back to basics. Keeping a secret, keeping a confidence, what do we say about that in general terms? And then we'll go to more specific cases where there are allowances. The Chofetz Chaim, the famous Rabbi of Radin, who wrote the book on Shmirat HaLashon, not to, sort of give away, say things in tattletale and all the rest of it, and gave us all the rules of that. He, believe it or not, gives four situations where you can reveal a confidence. Very interesting. So, you know, there are places. If he said it was allowed, I can assure you it was allowed. There are so many stories about Chofetz Chaim, about the way that he managed to avoid even hearing Lashon Hara, let alone saying Lashon Hara, that if he allows you to reveal something like this, wow, there must be something in it. So have a look at the page. You've got here Psukim. These are famous verses from Sefer Mishlei. Shlomo HaMelech, one of the greatest Jews who ever lived. One of the smartest Jews who ever lived, right? Very smart man. Wrote the book of Mishlei, the book of Proverbs. So what does he say? Look at these verses, middle of the page. Famous. Rivcha riv et reyecha v'sod acher al tager. Have your arguments, but don't reveal secrets, right? You know, you may disagree with someone, but if you know some juicy information about him, keep it to yourself, all right? In other words, you know, don't use your knowledge in a detrimental way to the other person. If you're disagreeing, don't bring sort of, you know, the cavalry, the reinforcements in that sort of way, because that's not the way to go. It's not ethical to start revealing things. This usually happens in business, you know, when people sort of are partners for years and they break up. Unfortunately, there's sort of knowledge between the two, which can be very destructive, and one should be careful. He says another pasuk, and obviously Shlomo HaMelech is worried about this. He said, "Gol esod holech rachil." Right? If someone is revealing secrets, then he becomes a tattletale. He's telling stories. Ulepetach svatav lo titarev, and he's telling you, don't get involved with the mouth of that person. Keep away from such a person. A person's got a reputation for telling stories, tall stories, short stories, whatever they may be. Don't go near it. Don't go near her, don't go near that person whatsoever. Well, in the Torah, we've got the pasuk which we know, Lo telech rachil ba'amecha, do not go and tell tales amongst your nation. Lo tamod adam reecha, don't stand by the blood of your neighbor. So the rabbis say, what's one thing got to do with the other? And the rabbis say very clearly, if you go and spread rumors and spread lies and tell stories, it can lead to dam, it can lead to blood. As simple as that. Unfortunately, people don't realize that one word in the wrong direction, or even not saying the word, but the facial expression, you know, that you can say at a certain, make at a certain time, this can destroy. This can absolutely have such a negative effect. And it's, you've got to be very, very careful, because lo tamod adam re'echa, do not stand by the blood of your neighbor, of your friend. Wow. So you've got to be very careful about this. Look at the Gemara here, Sanhedrin. This is unbelievable. Gemara says, this is about judges, how careful they have to be. So interesting, when you see a decision on the Supreme Court, it's always not about the people who said yes, but you want to know about the one judge who said no, right? And you want to find out who said no of all the Supreme Court. In the Sanhedrin, not allowed. Listen to this. It's the quotation two-thirds of the way down the page, first page. Uminayin l'chiyetzei, when the judge comes out of court, how do we know? Lo yomar ani mezakeh v'chaverai mechayvim. That you start announcing, well, I found him innocent, and all of that law, all the other bearded gentlemen over here found him guilty. Avomar said, what can I do? Shechaverai rabu alai. The majority, they were against. I was for his innocence. They were for his guilt, and therefore, that's the story. That you mustn't say that as a judge. Alzeh ne'emar lo telech rachil ba'amecha v'omeh holech rachil. If you do that, you're revealing secrets, and clearly this is something very detrimental. So the judge has to be careful what he says. He doesn't go and reveal that he was the one who voted innocent when everybody else said guilty. Mustn't do that. Again, what happens if you say and never be found out? I'll tell you something and keep it between us. All right? Is that a good policy? Says Mishnah Avot, very famous. This was in the Second World War. There was a big, very big poster campaign in London. Probably was here as well. Walls have ears, right? I understand that was a slogan. And look what it says here. Mishnah Avot. It was taken from Pirkei Avot. Al tama davar she'ef shal lishma. Don't say something which you think, oh, I'll never be heard. She'safo lishama. It will be heard. Right? Don't think that, you know, you're immune. Don't think that it'll never be seen or never be heard. With so much nowadays surveillance, and as I said, eventually who knows what the drone will become. Who knows? I hope that this book is scaring the life out of me. I'm listening to it as an audio book while I'm driving. I really shouldn't do that because it's really a scary world that is being presented. I don't know. I hope we never get to that stage, but who knows? Who knows if we haven't got to that stage already in surveillance and all the rest that's going on. It's kind of a scary world. Look at the page, the second page, because this is a famous statement of the Gemara. Just Gemara is just generally telling you, keep your confidences. Don't reveal them. And a lot of sources, but I think these sources really are important. Gemara in Erechin, Omar Rabba Bar Huna, Kol Milta Demit Amra Bapei Talata, Letba Mishum Lishna Bish. In other words, there's a whole statement in the Gemara. Once it's known to three people, it becomes public knowledge. Right? In other words, you don't now have to worry about Lashon Hara. Obviously, you should not let it out of the bag in the first place. But the thing is that once you do, you're done, right? You're finished. The Chofetz Chaim puts it very dramatically. He says Lashon Hara is the idea of he talks about this sort of very Eastern European. The pillows were made with feathers, so he says break the pillow. The feathers fly everywhere, and he says one word of Lashon Hara is like a broken pillow. He says go and try and gather in all of those feathers, especially in a windy day. You'll never get them all back. He says, and that's what happens, unfortunately, if a word is revealed which should not be revealed or should not have been said. And he says here that the famous statement of the Gemara, my time, what's the reason? And this is so Jewish. Chavra, chavra itle. Your friend has got a friend. V'chavra de chavra, and the friend of your friend, chavra itle, he's also got a friend. In other words, it's a Jewish community, right? Very hard to keep things secret for more than about 5 seconds. It's one of those very difficult things, and one has to be very circumspect, particularly in positions of authority and leadership. I really believe this very. I think this is still very much the case to this very day. And again, very, very much this next piece, which I'm not going to go into. It's the word lemor, which is in the Torah. Lemor is always said as a command to Moshe to tell someone else. That's the usual explanation. By the Be'er Hashem el Moshe, God spoke to Moshe lemor to tell somebody else. So it's seemingly God is giving Moshe permission to say this particular piece of information to the rest of the Jewish people. There are certain situations where it says, "Debeh Hashem al Moshe," without the word lemor. And therefore, obviously, from that analysis in itself, there is a suggestion that certain things, certain conversation between God and Moses at that particular time were meant to be between Hashem and Moses, period. Nobody else. And, you know, this, we can go on and on and on all about this. This next Gemara in Sanhedrin is the one that really... It's a wow, and just shows how a different planet the rabbis were on to everybody else. He says like this, look at this, middle of the second page, Sanhedrin 31. Ahu Talmida, there was a certain student, doesn't say who he is. The Nafika Le Kola, the Goli Milta, the Idma Be Midrasha Bata Esrin Batatin Shnin. There was a secret that was shared in the Beit Midrash between whoever it was and this particular student. And for 22 years, he kept shtum, he kept quiet. And then, one day, he wakes up and he says, right, 22 years later, he tells another person. We're not even told what the story was. Says the Gemara, Rav Ami, who was the Rebbe of the yeshiva, he heard about it. Rav Ami Bei Midrash. Rav Ami threw this guy out of the Beit Midrash. After 22 years, serious event. Den Galei Raza. This is a person who reveals secrets. Wow. 22 years he kept his confidence. And after that time, he said something, and Rav Ami said, out of here. You alright? This was a secret that you should never have revealed. Get out of the Beit Midrash. Wow. I've just mentioned here that in England, there was always this law I don't know what it is here, if the cabinet has a certain period of time when they don't reveal their discussions, right? The president's cabinet, if it's all written down or it's not written down. In England, there's 30-year rule, right? Something
so
which is...
We have some things like
there
that.
Is something like that, 30
it
years.
It depends on when they will open up a file. Some right. files are secret, like the Kennedy assassination. Just
that we still don't know what happened to this day.
Some of the files just got released after 50 years.
50 years, right. In England, it's usually 30 years. So, you know, you sort of get, you're still alive to sort of remember, oh, now I understand what happened 30 years ago, when most of the people, the players, are already gone. Whether that's changed, whether the rule is now longer, I don't know. I think it is still 30 years. There's an interesting thing here, Rabbeinu Yonah. And I'm just going to read this to you, because again, we're talking about Musa, we're talking about ethics, we're talking about philosophical approach. And Rabbeinu Yonah, the very famous rabbi of the Middle Ages, who wrote the book Shaarei Tshuva, which is really a book that people study during Chodesh Elul. It's a book of telling about repentance. He talks about keeping secrets. It's the bottom of the second page. Now listen to this, because this is so interesting that he, in the context of a book dealing with tshuva, dealing with repentance, dealing with spiritual matters, he feels that he has to dedicate a whole paragraph here to the issue of keeping a confidence. Look what he says. And I'll read it very quickly. He says, V'chayv Adam, lastira soda sheigale alav chavero, Derek Satan. In other words, somebody tells you something in confidence, keep it to yourself. Chayv, you have to, he says. Even if letting people know about it is not Lashon Hara, it's not saying something derogatory about somebody else. Someone just let you know where they keep the key, you know, at the front door, under which flower pot, as they say, right? So you know the information, how to get into the house. But keep it to yourself, you know, that's not Lashon Hara. That is going to be sort of, well, I don't know, it may affect the people if somebody finds out it was a gunner. But generally speaking, you know what I'm saying, it's not going to change lives, that particular piece of information, but keep it to yourself. He says, Ki yesh begalui, the second line, middle, Ki yesh begalui hasod, when you reveal the secret, nezek leba'ala, can be damaging to the person who told you the secret, v'siba lehafer machshavto, and can cause him really to change his mind, to cancel what he was thinking. In other words, revealing the secret has consequences. Commotion, as we saw in Mishlei, hafer, as another pasuk, hafer machshavot be'ein sod, right? That someone who changes his thoughts is without secret, meaning that, you know, if you don't keep secrets, it can change a person's thinking. Particularly the person who sort of shares the confidence. Vashenit, the second reason, he says, which is also interesting, he says that not only is this something which I'm telling you is going to cause damage, but vashenik imagale hasod, when you reveal the secret, ach yatsa miderech hatzniut. What an interesting word. This becomes an act of non-tzniut, immodesty. It's not modest to reveal secrets. Now you'll say to me, what's that got to do with tzniut? So I'll tell you a little item that I was teaching this week. I'm teaching about Devarah. Devarah is, to me, the classic example of the exception making the rule. What is Devarah? She's a judge, right? She's like a queen in a world, in a biblical world, where it was kings and not queens. The Torah says only kings and not queens. Along comes Devarah, who is the most acceptable and qualified person to be the judge, the leader of the Jewish people, and she's accepted. So what happens in that? So we read a few weeks ago in the Haftarah, that very long Haftarah, on Parshat Beshalach. So what happens with Devarah? Devarah then calls Barak, who happens to be her husband, according to the rabbis, and she says to him, Barak says to her, Devarah, you've got to come and lead the army. So Devarah says, no, I'm not going to lead the army. That's not what we do, right? That's not my style. It's not sniut, she said to him. It's not modest. So he said, Devarah, if you don't go, then I don't go, all right? And therefore, Devarah said, by default, I'm going to have to go. So I asked the students, I said, wait a minute, what has this got to do with tzniut? All of you here, you've had the lecture a dozen times about the length of your skirts and the length of your sleeves and everything else. Some of them do, some of them don't. I said, I'm not here to lecture you about that. That's between you and God and your boyfriend, essentially. But that's the story. Doesn't matter. But the reality of it is, tzniut is not, that's very small part of it, how you dress, the sort of self-image that you have, but it's much, much more about what sort of person you are. Are you a decent human being? Are you a person of tzniut, a person of modesty? In other words, in the way you conduct yourself, the way you speak, the way that you keep a confidence, because that is called tzniut. And I think it registered, Devorah felt that as a woman, in the world that she was in, it just was not fitting for her as a woman to be there in front of the army to rally the troops to go to war. This was something that she felt was not her place. And Barak had to convince her with a very strong argument by saying, well, if you don't go, I don't go. We lose the war. Because if the general's not there, there's no war. Well, there's a loss. So she went. But it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating that he uses the word tzniut. Okay, and again, I'm trying to make that point that this idea of tzniut, hatznei alecha im elokecha, the famous pasuk, to go modestly with your God, to walk in modesty. But again, not talking about the length of your skirt, the clothing, but talking much more about the mindset, what's going on in your mind, what's going on in your heart. So that's just a little taste of what I was teaching this week. And he says it here as well. He says, revealing a secret is yotza mideret tzniut, the end of the third line. You've gone out of the ways of modesty. For who, avihine, who ma'avir adat balasod, and he's not respecting the person who's holding the secret. V'amar Shlomo alav ha-shalom, again, quoting Shlomo HaMelech, so Shlomo obviously was very concerned about this, and possibly so, goles sod holech rachim. To reveal secrets, you know, you become a tattletale, that's your reputation. Ritzono lama, what does Shlomo mean, says Rabbeinu Yonah. He says, im tire ish, if you see a person, she'enenu moshel b'rucho lishmo lishono, migilo yasod, that he's just impossible, he'll never keep a confidence, af al pi she'en b'machsof hasod ahu, inyan rechilut, even if it's not detrimental in what he's saying, but alam l'chaveiro, between man and man, tevi'eyu hamida hazod liyot holech rachil, eventually he will start telling bad stories about other people, shehu, may Abba Hakitot Ra'ot, this becomes one of the four groups that it says Hashem despises. One of them is someone who tells stories, reveals secrets, which he should not reveal. Achareya She'ein Svatav Rishuto L'Shamram, because he's not guarding his lips, he's not in control. And he goes on and he reveals further. You can see that for Rabbeinu Yonah, who is really the quintessential Bal Musa, the person who gives us all of the ethical teachings that he does, keeping a secret, keeping a confidence is a very serious part of your sort of, who you are as a person. Derech tzniut. I find that incredible word to use here. But that's what he's saying. Turn over to the next page. And again, I just pulled the rules. Never reveal secrets in general. Keep them to yourself. Even if the listener promises not to pass it on, still keep it to yourself. And even if the reason for keeping it secret is long past, we said 22 years. Still no allowance to reveal it. So far, it's really, you can put like a zipper on your mouth and say, whoop, that's it. Everything is closed. Nothing to be said, nothing to be revealed. There's got to be an exception. There always is. Like in Jewish law, there's got to be two opinions, right? So in this case, yeah, there have to be certain situations where you are allowed to reveal it, but you've got to be told that you are allowed to do so. And here comes the first case, which is kind of obvious. What happens if you are a witness in a court case, right? What are you going to do? You're going to sit there and be very nice and not tell the judge or the jury or whoever what you saw and what happened. It doesn't work like that. You've got to just say what happened, what you saw. That's an allowance, which in fact the Torah demands of you to be a witness as and when you should be a witness, right? Don't become so frum and religious about it by saying, well, I can't talk about this and I can't talk about that. When it comes to a court case, you have to. The Rambam brings it here, it's on the third page. Listen to this. The Rambam says, Ha'ed mitzuveh lahaid, a witness is commanded to testify, bebedin, in the beis din, in the court, bechol eidut sheyodea, any testimony that he knows, bein be'eidut sheyichayev et chavro, even if it's going to cause his friend, his Reuven and Shimon is going to be out of pocket by who knows how much, or worse, bein be'eidut sheyizakeobo, maybe it's something that Shimon will come out of court, you know, completely exonerated. It doesn't matter what the consequence, you've got to tell the evidence. For who she dvenu lahaid b'dinei mamanot, we're talking here about monetary things, and the court has got to summons you, which is what the Beit Din do, they call it hazmana. They send you I love the word hazmanah because it sounds like a wedding invitation. That's the Hebrew for hazmanah. It's not quite a wedding invitation when you get a summons. When you get a subpoena from the court. It's not quite like that, but that's the word we use in Hebrew. You get a hazmanah from the court. Very, very interesting. I suppose they want to sort of, you know, soften the blow a little bit. It's an interesting thing. Shene'ema, because it says, V'hu eid, o ra'ah, o yodah, that's the pasuk in the Torah. You're a witness, he saw, he knows. Im lo yagid, if you don't say, v'nasa'a b'no, you bear the sin. In other words, speak up. So that's point number one. And as we said, if you don't reveal the knowledge that you have, you'll become despised in the eyes of God. There's a whole Gemara about it, Gemara Pesachim. I just wrote here, brought here the beginning of the reference. Don't want to go into it. It's one of those Gemaras that is very distressing because the Gemara says Shlosha Kodesh Baruch Hu Sunan, horrible word, right? There are three groups of people that God detests. Use the word hate, but I prefer the word detest. Interesting. The first sort of person is what we would call the hypocrite, right? He's talking with his mouth, but in his heart he's got a completely different feeling, a completely different agenda going on. That's a subject for another shir. He knows evidence and he doesn't say it, right? That's a very bad situation for a person to be in that situation, to willingly withhold evidence when you can give it. So there's clearly an allowance to testify. That's doesn't matter, revealed secrets or not. Now again, you know, the pleading the fifth and all the various things, or in England they can sort of say no comment and get away with it and not have to comment to the police initially. All of this is very difficult sometimes to deal with. In essence, in terms of the person on trial. But if you are a witness, you really should be prepared to testify. And that's... again, one of those things that I think is kind of obvious, but it needs to be said. This is the difficult one. The whole question, as we said before, withholding information which can lead to hurting another person is forbidden. All right? Now, if we're talking about the phone call about the shidduch, and 6 months later, and I'll tell a little story because this happened to a friend of mine from a very long time ago, who've actually been in email contact recently. He listens to these shiurim, so I hope he'll forgive me if I mention this story, but it's a very long time ago, that his first marriage lasted for 6 months. And what happened was, it was wonderful shidduch, he got married from boy, and they went, I think, to live in Eretz Yisrael at the time. He's been living in Israel forever. And after 6 months, there was a divorce, and we wondered, you know, what happened? And it turns out, oh, I forgot to tell you. You know, that sort of story came out. Whoever had set them up had forgot to mention that this girl was in fact, unfortunately, going through some very severe mental health problems. Right? It got to the point where the young lady refused to go to mikveh, she refused to she was out, you know, so that she just wasn't functioning in what we would call any sort of normal way, and they had to get divorced. And this is one of the most difficult circumstances in terms of what do you say, what do you not say. If you know something, do you get involved? And you'll see here, we've got at the bottom what the Chofetz Chaim tells us. But look at the Shulchan Aruch here. This is interesting. It's codified. It's in Jewish law. Middle of the third page. It says, Aroet chavero tover bayam. Talks about a couple of cases here. If you see a person, Nebuch, who's drowning. Alright, I like the story in the Gemara. The Gemara says that there's a case of a woman drowning, Nebuch, and there's a guy standing on the bank. I can imagine this happening. And the guy says, oh, I can't jump in to save her. So you say, you idiot, why not? He says, well, you know, I mustn't touch a woman. But she's drowning, for goodness sake. So the Gemara says, this is called chassid shoteh, an idiot, a pious idiot. That's what the Gemara calls it. You've got this chance to save her life, and you're standing there, you're such a frummer that you don't want to touch her, for goodness sake, you know, common sense should prevail. It's unreal. And look at this, this is what essentially a connection to this halacha, choshe mishpah. And it's sort of interesting what it says. You see somebody's drowning. Oh, listim ba'im ala. Oh, Nebuch is being attacked by bandits, by robbers. Oh, chayara ba'alav. Oh, there's a wild animal just about to attack him. V'yachol atzilo ba'atzmo. You can go and save him. You've got the gun, you've got the spear, whatever it may be. Oh, she'yiskor achirim latzil. V'lo itzil. Or you can get others. Call the police. You know, it's on the subway in Nebuchadnezzar. There's stuff going on there the whole time. Get the people from, you know, to come and help. And you just stand there and do nothing. Oh, sheshama akum. Oh, masrim mechashvim alav. Or you know that there's a plot being made. This is sort of more the higher political level. People are plotting against this person, ra'ah, to do bad. Oh, tomnim lo pach v'lo gila ozen chaviro v'odiyo. Oh, there's something going on. And you don't tell him what's going on. Or you can prevent the damage by paying off the person who is causing the trouble in the first place. Or to make sure that he doesn't go and fulfill what he's going to do. Below pi, so you didn't do it. You had the money, you had the means, you didn't do it. What does the halacha say? Over. This is breaking a biblical prohibition. Alo ta'amod adam re'echa. Wow. If you can do something about it, you have to go and do something about it. And that's sort of laying it on the line. However, here's the interesting thing which you've got here. I don't want to get into the whole thing of business proposals. That's also a whole minefield of what you do know, what you don't know. Shmirat al-Lashon, this is where it gets very, very defined. As I said before, the Chofetz Chaim was not famous for sort of laying out allowances. Much more famous for making strictures, right? To sort of make, he took generally a very strict approach. It's an interesting thing that in Eastern Europe, there were two great rabbis who decided Jewish law. The Chofetz Chaim in Radin in Poland, who was very famous, the Mishnah Berurah, died in 1933. And before him, someone called Yechiel Mechel Epstein. People haven't heard of him. He's known by his sefer, Orach HaShulchan. And the Orach HaShulchan was a Rav in Navardok. And he wrote this fantastic, like 20-volume work on Halakha. And in Eastern Europe, it was very much more the tradition to follow the Orach HaShulchan's decisions than the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim was considered in his day to be very, very strict. Right? He was known as the Tzaddik of Radin. He was a very interesting sort of life story and a very pious, extremely pious gentleman. You can even on YouTube, there's even a film that was revealed about maybe 5 or 6 years ago of the Chofetz Chaim entering into one of the Aguda conferences in Europe. He went from Poland to Vienna, I think it was, where the conference took place. And a very short man, never wore anything more than his Polish cap, which was very distinct. But again, in his work, which generally is very strict, is sort of veers towards the what we call the Chumrah, in this case he gives us 4 allowances to reveal certain information. This is very interesting. Number one, the danger is real and imminent, like the halacha says, right? You can do something about stopping the person being hurt. Number two, do not exaggerate the information. This is the most challenging one, right? You've got to just say what it is, but don't embellish it. We like to embellish, unfortunately, some of us, and you've got to be careful. Only reveal specific condition, but not to predict that the person has 6 months to live. This is speculation. In other words, don't go more than what you know, the bare minimum of what you know. And then you leave the other party, like in the case of a marriage proposal, with their own decisions to make and their own inquiries to follow. Number three, the motive must be pure and not for personal gain or revenge. If you're going to reveal something, it's got to be l'shem shamayim, for pure purposes. And number four, if you know the couple will marry anyway, then there's no allowance to reveal the information. If you say, as they say, it's a bracha levatola. If you know that this is not going to change anything, and you know something which is pertinent, but you just realize that, you know, saying it is just going to get you into trouble, then just don't say it, and what will be will be. He writes it like that, but at least, you know, what I'm trying to say is that he gives you a bit of leeway. He gives you a bit of an allowance. If one is faced with any of these questions, again, it's call the rabbi. One needs to have some sort of guidance about this, what to say or not to say. And very often, as my Rav, I mentioned last week, Gershon Lopian used to say very much, on almost everything that he decided, there is a fifth section of Shulchan Aruch, which is called common sense. And very often you just have to apply the rule of what we call in Yiddish, seichel. You've got to use your seichel. If you don't use your seichel in any of these situations, you're missing the point. There are guidelines, but you can see the guidelines are very, very difficult sometimes to apply. But you will know if this is right. You'll have a kind of intuition. Is it right or is it wrong? Practical cases. This is also very interesting. The confidentiality, doctor-patient confidentiality in a bet din. Right? On the one hand, you've got confidentiality towards your patient. On the other hand, you've got a mitzvah in the bet din. If you make an oath in bet din to give evidence, and it may very well reveal that confidentiality. So what do? You've got your relationship to the patient on one side, and you've got your relationship to God, essentially, on the other side. Who wins? Who comes out on top? All right? And this, again, is an interesting thing. That the story of Tzitz Eliezer, just to say a little bit about him, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, he was the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital. Very amazing Talmud Chacham. I had the great privilege of davening in his shul last time we stayed in the center of Yerushalayim. Tiny little shul, and it says, you know, this is where the Rav used to sit, had his seat at the front, and it was impressive, you know, that for a person who was world-renowned as a posek, as a decider of Jewish law, we spoke about posek last week, the modesty, again, the true modesty of this person was revealed in where he prayed, and I'm sure in a lot of other things as well. And he was faced with this kind of question about a bus company, Eged. Eged was trying to employ somebody, and you knew about this man, Nebuch, that he had epilepsy, that potentially, right? He'd had one bout of it, and the question is, he could be potentially very dangerous, especially if he's driving a bus. Should you tell Eged, should you let them know, in order that the person's application should not be taken on? You know, there'll be other things that maybe the person could do for Eged, but not drive buses. That's basically the story that he had to deal with. And as one can expect, he gave the answer, which is, you know, even if it's a confidence that you know about this person, you can't hold this information back. He allows you to do it, to say it. The story with Igrot Moshe is at the bottom of the page in the Hebrew, which I want to read to you. This is kind of a final comment of how to deal with a situation as a teacher. Getting kids to reveal, you know, we're standing in a classroom here, essentially. It's getting kids to reveal the information. So look what Rav Moshe says, and it's very, very interesting. A great Gaon in Torah, dealing with the common, probably everyday situation that teachers may face, trying to find out who is the bad guy amongst the group. There are ways of doing this, but look what Rav Moshe says. It's the last section, section B, right at the end. And he says like this, Uvedavar im Rishoy hamalamed, Lomar l'talmidav. Can a teacher say to his student, "She'im yodim mi asad davar haganai yodilam"? Right, that they should rat on their friends, as they say. They should let me know who did it. You can come to me afterwards. Nobody has to know who said it. Is the teacher allowed to make such a statement to his class? Now, again, this is not pedagogy. This is asking the greatest rabbi of the generation: am I allowed to do this as a teacher? Look what he says. He doesn't say forbidden. The language is very interesting. He says, "Udavar mechu'ar." This is something really despicable. This is not good teaching practice, as we would say. Lasot came to do this. And he says, why? Dezeh yigrom? Because what will happen is that you'll set a precedent. They'll start telling on each other. Sheyakilu b'loshon hara. You're there to tell them not to do loshon hara. Not to encourage them to start talking about each other. Brilliant. This is typical Rav Moshe. He used to get it. He really got it. Even in a teaching situation, he understood. He says, "Ava ho shayach ze kishemit ore miatzmo lesaper l'rav kadei sheyochicha." Now, what happens if the kid volunteers without the teacher saying, "You should come to me"? That's a different case. "V'lo kishearav yigzal tamidav," but not because the rabbi made a gezeri, made a rule, sheyisaprulo, that they should tell him. In other words, if the student is motivated by himself to have a private word with the Rebbe, that's a different case. And again, the Rebbe has to be extremely careful in what precedent you establish, but, you know, at least that's not the Rebbe forcing the young man or young woman to tell him. And he says, "Im yodim davar haguna," if the student knows something bad. "Akasha talmidim heim gedolei olam." Doesn't matter who the students are, they could be the greatest people in the world. Vetzleinu, by us, he says, "Lo shayach lachshiv bichlal shehu lishma." You can always say, what about lishma? You're doing it for the sake of God, for the sake of who knows what, but the answer is no, not in this case. Certainly you can't say the kids are doing it shelo lishma, they're doing it not really with any negative intent. It's a very bad precedent that you would set if a teacher encourages this kind of, you know, come and tell me sort of attitude. Very, very interesting. Whether that's borne out by other pedagogues, you know, I leave you to find out about that in your own way, because it's an interesting thing. That to me, it's interesting that Ramosha Feinstein, a great rabbinic authority, writes about this, as does Rav Waldenberg Tzitz Eliezer in Eretz Yisrael. He's writing about an egged situation with a bus driver, and again, these are questions that not only are questions of employment, but become halachic issues. The greatest egged bus driver, just want to finish with this thought, two thoughts. The greatest egged bus driver I ever met, I don't know his name, I think his name was Chaim, don't even know his second name. And it was in Eretz Yisrael, it was Hoshana Rabbah. And before I went back to the yeshiva to study for the rabbinate, I worked for a period of time in a bank. And this guy comes in on Hoshana Rabbah, Chaim, he's a Sephardi gentleman, and he looks half asleep. I said, I hope you're not driving. I said, Chaim. He says, look. I said, I'm not driving. I said, what happened? You look as if you just you stayed up all night. Then, of course, I forgot, because Sephardim and Hoshana Rabbah do stay up all night. Right? And this is a Sephardi gentleman, an Eged bus driver. He stayed up the whole night. And then he says to me, you Ashkenazim, he says, you Hoshana Rabbah is nothing to you. He says, we treat it like Shavuot. We say Tilim, and then we said the Tikkun, and then we said the Zohar. And then we daven Netzachama, we go to the Kotel at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm looking at this guy, this is a tzaddik, and he's driving an Eged bus. Never underestimate, when you're in Israel, the Eged bus driver. You never know what a tzaddik that man could really be. This guy, I'll never forget him, Chaim. Don't know if he's probably Cohen, I guess. Talking about confidences, just one final thought. Coming up to Purim, what is the greatest story of confidences that we have in the Bible? Esther, Mordechai, what does Mordechai say to Esther? Don't tell the king who you are, right? Greatest story. Wait to the moment. And when I say you can reveal it, go and reveal it. It's like an obvious proof. Bottom line of all of this is, let's say, philosophically, from the point of view of Musav, ethically, keep a secret to yourself. That's what we're saying. When there are allowances, if you feel it's the right thing to do, and again, as I said, applying maybe Jewish law, but certainly it's a lot of common sense to the situation, then if you're absolutely sure you're right, you do what you have to do, but in a lot of cases, pick up the phone, and believe it or not, this is a shaila which every rabbi really should, let's put it this way, I don't think we're excited to receive it, because it's a hard question to answer, but this is where the rabbi's training really comes in, because he will then spell out to you, hopefully, the pros and the cons, you know, he will try and work with you in order to come to some sort of decision about what to do. But it is a question in Jewish law. It's fascinating. I'll leave it at that. Any questions from the audience? Telling secrets. Wow. Keep this sheer secret. That's the way to go.
I think the shidduch thing is interesting, because I've heard, you know, stories from friends, you know, in the more Haredi world, when they make phone calls, you know, they'll say you have to know how to listen to the answer, like what they, you know.
I know. And the whole thing of shadchanut. And what worries me is that when you're paying the shadchan, or the shadchanit, usually it's a woman, and you're giving her, and they're not cheap. This is talking about thousands of dollars. So how impartial can the person be when that amount of money is being involved in the whole case? They want to get the deal done, right? And if they know that there is a problem somewhere along the line, they may very well sit on it. They may not say, I don't know. I don't know any shadchanim. Well, we actually do know a shadchanim, but not in this particular world. Someone from the more modern Orthodox one. It's a very challenging thing. It's very, very challenging. Next time, are we good for next week? I hope we'll be good.
I'm personally not able to be here,
yeah.
But I'll make sure.
But we're
okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Triage. We're going to talk about scarce resources. Lots of people want to use, you know, you get a donation, $10 million, comes into the coffers. What do you do with it? Do you build a library or do you build a hospital? Okay? Serious question. There's a whole Gemara about this.
Or about if you have 10 million stuck on envelopes, which you give to triage.
Yeah, that's also, you know, there's a lot of triage situations in Stockholm. There's also other things as well. This one is a bit of a heavy number, but this whole thing of keeping confidence, I think, you know, it's new. I think that's the message to take away, right? It's about decency. It's about being a mensch, to keep a confidence. I'll leave it at that. Thank you. How Facebook has changed this whole story. It's really scary. And I'm not sure for the better. I really am not sure. Don't think so. Thank you, everybody. Erev Tov. Good evening.